Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Midpoint. I'm so happy that my guest this week is a man who has brought so much joy to so many people since the start of COVID restrictions back in March. Andrew Cotter's day job is commentating on sport, which he is brilliant at, and I've worked with him for 12 years on rugby, athletics and a range of BBC sports shows. I always knew he was a dog man, and at the start of lockdown in March, he combined his love of Mabel and Olive, his Labradors, with his talent as a commentator. The result has been phenomenal. Tens of thousands of downloads of his amazing videos, a global book deal, interest from Hollywood producers, there's even a musical that's been mooted, and a wonderful second career has been spawned. His colleagues always knew he was darkly funny, and now the world does too. So my expert to kind of go alongside this is a global CEO, Jim Heitner. He's got top tips about starting a new business venture if you've had something burning inside you over the last year or so that you're desperate to launch following Andrew's inspirational lead. This episode comes to you thanks to Solgar, whose 70-year commitment to health and well-being has resulted in almost 300 different vitamins and minerals, which means we can all keep healthy through the cold winter months to come.
Come on then.
Hi. Hi, Olive and Mabel.
There's Mabel at the back. Yeah.
It's like having an audience with the Pope, isn't
like
it? Look. Oh, look. You see, Emma's normally left by now, but she's hanging around to see the real stars.
Coming up.
She's normally off doing her own ironing. I might have to get you to get them back at some point. So we are now officially recording, Andrew, so you can put that proper commentator's voice on if you want.
Oh, Gabby, lovely to hear from you. How are you? Yeah.
My kids always accuse me of having a telly voice because they kind of go, that's your telly voice. Why are you using your telly voice?
Well, we all do. We do have a different broadcast, slightly different broadcasting voice. I'm probably slightly broader when I'm talking to, and certainly when I'm talking to the rest of my family up in Scotland, I'd be not much broader, but I'd be broader than I am when I'm broadcasting. A lot of broads in the
yeah,
early
there's,
salvos
there's a lot
in this
of breadth
podcast.
To you. All right, we know that. There's a lot of depth, a lot of breadth. But I don't think you do, actually. I think you sound pretty consistent, actually, having listened to you all the time.
I would mumble a bit more when I'm not broadcasting because I'm not...
Which is not a major attribute for a commentator.
No, and I do. But that's one thing that broadcasting helped me with in that you have to... not enunciate, but you have to speak clearly. And I always spoke reasonably clearly, but I think when I'm talking in normal conversation, you're not quite as... I'm a lot more stuttery as well, I think, when I'm, as you can probably tell in this opening exchange again.
Not at all.
I think it's because my mind wanders off onto various other things and down avenues and whatever. But when you're commentating, you've got a clarity of that's the action. So I've got to commentate on that. I've got to be precise and clear. Whereas if you get me in conversation,
then
I don't know. It doesn't happen, does it? Again, the thing is, you know me. I can't lie to the listeners and say, quite often I give the impression, and throughout this whole dog video success, that...
I like you embracing it.
Andrew's such a... Yeah, exactly. He's a really cheery, and he seems like a great people person. Whereas you'll know that I'm perhaps slightly more misanthropic than I give
you. We'll get to that.
Yeah. We're all just acting in those videos. That's not really the true Olive and Mabel either.
Yeah, no, I've just seen them. You just let me have a little hello with them and they came wagging their tails, having some kind of toy in their mouth. So they're real. They're real. Mm. They're alive. They're well. They are not stage dogs. You'll be delighted to know, Andrew, that because this podcast is called Midpoint, we don't have to go back and dissect your childhood, you know, talk about the formative years, things that created the persona we all know now. But it did strike me when I was thinking about speaking to you, and I hope you take this the right way. Oh, I met you in 2008 at the Olympics in Beijing. I just started working for the BBC, so I've known you 12 years. And right from the very first time I met you, I had a feeling that you were somebody who looked forward to being grown up when you were a child.
Well, I'm going to say that's... No, I think I... I mean, I am exceedingly immature. But I was always quite a sort of grumpy child, I would imagine. Yeah.
Well, but I think it's that part of your personality which seems quite grown up, because most kids, a kind of grumpiness only happens when they can't get their sweets, or, you know, so it's quite grown up to be grumpy. Do you know what I mean?
I think I'm also a little bit, I do tend to, and I don't want to sort of open myself up in the, this is the psychiatrist chair or anything here, but I do tend to look on the bleaker side of things as well. Or perhaps, I would say that I just see the reality of the world, which can be a pretty, you know, horrible place at times. And that might well be a slightly Scottish trait as well, and that there's a, you know, certainly we have a reputation for being rather gloomy. That's not the case for all people. But, you know, when someone points out to me about Andy Murray, they say, oh, he's such a dour bastard. You go, well, no, he's actually probably mid-table to upper table in terms of cheeriness in Scotland. I don't know. There is definitely a northern bleakness to, you know, and there's it's a Scandinavian trait as well. You know, yeah. I think it must be related to the lack of sunshine or whatever it might be. Or the dark winter nights, which just go on and on and on. But there's definitely a dourness and a bleakness to a lot of Scottish people. So again, I hope I'm cheering up in this podcast here. The thing is, you're married to someone who bucks the trend entirely. Kenny would be the counterweight to almost everybody else in Scotland, in that he is the most positive, life-affirming force of nature you've ever met. And when I meet him, it's like, it's like yin and yang, and we just collide, and somehow we create a being that's again pretty much down the middle, because he's so happy and I'm the other side.
He met you, he already knew you obviously, but it was on a plane in 2003 at the Rugby World Cup.
Yes.
He just commentated on a game, and he told me as he walked on the plane, he saw you and he saw your facial expression. And Scotland had actually just won a match of rugby.
Yeah.
And what did he say to you?
I mean, it was words to the effect of, you know, with a few words left out, cheer up, come on, whatever. I mean, it was just, but I do specifically remember that meeting, because he was just bouncing around. I think we'd just beaten the Vatican City, scraped a 3-point win.
And, listen, and a win is a win.
He was being
But you see, your dourness, whatever you want to call it, your reality, your, you know, just seeing the truth in life, you do turn that into very dark humour. You know, you are a naturally funny man. So it's not like you go around telling people to stop being happy. You've just got a very kind of clever, dark sense of humor.
I play up to it a little bit, because, you know, I'll come into the bar of an evening at a hotel. I mean, that itself is a lie, obviously. I don't do that, but if I did, everyone would go, here comes Chuckles or whatever. And so you play up to that persona a little bit. I mean, I love all, not all comedy at all. I don't know why I said that. I love comedy and good
it's
comedy.
It's very dangerous to say, by the way, that you love all comedy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. I'm Mrs. Brown's boys. I don't, you know, so I love good comedy and observation, satire. And quite a lot of that comes from a dark, cynical place in people. And, you know, you'll know most of the most talented comics out there are pretty dark people. And it's that edge to them. I'm not saying that that sounds like I'm saying, and I, of course, I'm one of those genius comics, but there's definitely a darkness and a bleakness. And I'm always wary of people who are relentlessly optimistic, because I think, have you not been paying attention? Do you not see the world and see everything that's going wrong or can go wrong or whatever? I don't know. But again, that's the way you're born. A lot, some of it will be nurture as well, but I think a lot of it is just the way you're wired.
If you have really desperately sad and bad things happen to you when you're younger, sometimes you kind of make a conscious decision then to decide that that's not going to define you, because terrible things can happen.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's no excuse for me at all. I've been very, very fortunate in everything I've had in life. You know, you think about all the people in the world who are in dreadful situations or have dreadful things happen to them. And touch wood, I've come from a place of privilege, not enormous privilege, but I mean privilege in terms of being somebody from that demographic which has had no oppression or things to worry about, a fairly comfortable middle-class lifestyle and good education and nice people around me. So there's no excuse for any of the way I sometimes look at the world, but that's just the way you are wired. And sometimes you feel bad about it because of that. You think, well, what have I got to complain about? So you're aware of that, but it doesn't stop you feeling the way you feel about things. And most of the time you're feeling it on behalf of the pain you can see in the rest of the world anyway. You're not thinking about your own situation, thinking, oh, woe is me. You're thinking, oh, woe are all those other people. Mm. And so you soak all that in and you're angry and upset and a bit down on their behalf. Was this supposed to be quite a fun podcast? Because again, I'm sort of misinterpreting things here.
No, it's because we start kind of in the middle of your life and you're in this period. I think we're pretty similar age, aren't we? I think I'm 47. And if you're not 47, then you're either just about to be or just
Monday. Monday. That, right. And yeah, throw a big party.
Of course you will.
I've never had a big party. I can't think of anything not worse, but I can't think of... the idea of saying, hey, it's a party and it's about me. What? I mean, come on.
I have to say, even though you probably think this is disingenuous, I only had a 40th birthday party because Denise Lewis told me to. She said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. And she said, you've got to celebrate it. You've got to celebrate. This is an amazing period of your life that you're about to head into.
Absolutely. Seb Coe said to me, Andrew, you've got to have a party. He didn't.
Denise is a colleague. I wasn't named.
I know.
She's a colleague.
I know.
So what is the juxtaposition of this, or maybe it's a natural reaction, is your relationship with animals and nature is so joyous, and what you've brought to people in lockdown with your revelation that not only can you commentate on major sporting events, but you can make very ordinary everyday dog events hugely entertaining. I don't know has this been going on in secret for a long time, or was it just a one-off thing that you just suddenly looked at the dogs and thought you need commentating on?
I mean, talking to my dogs has gone on my whole life. And again, perhaps some of that is to do with the fact that sometimes people who feel less comfortable with people are very comfortable with animals, or find a little bit of a solace in a chat with an animal. Now, that animal might be an absolute bastard and might be a very unpleasant animal, but we don't see that. Animals and dogs in particular are just very genuine and upfront. They might be greedy, they might be a little bit snappy and a bit grumpy, but I see a lot of honesty in animals. And,
so were you commentating in your head when you say you were talking to them? If you were out in the park?
No, never commentating. No, just chatting to them.
Okay, so you chat to them out loud in public?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's never chat as in, woo-woo very much, my little friggin' woof-woof-woof. whatever that was. But it's just, right, we're going over here now.
That's how people chat to chihuahuas, I think.
Well, exactly. It's people who, I don't know. It's people who consider them dogs, their children, say, mummy's very cross with woo. What? This isn't my child, this is a dog.
I don't chat to my children like that either, so maybe that makes me a bad mother. But I do, when I come down in the morning, I'm always usually the first up, and I see that the dogs come as they do, and that beautiful kind of waggy tails, really excited, can't believe that they're going to get to do another day with you, look in their eyes.
Yeah.
And I, good morning guys, you all right?
Exactly. You're talking to them, you just talk to them normally, and say, right, okay. And when I'm on a walk, I was saying, no, not that way, we're going this way over here. This way, yeah. And I'll be trying to say, no, we went that way yesterday, so we're not going that way today, we're going this way.
But they understand, like, Maggie always goes past this one particular turning that if I want to go, I say, no, Maggie, we're going right. And I actually say it like that, and she turns round and comes back. So she's hyper-intelligent, she knows the difference between right and left, or there's some kind of, like, the way my tone of my voice tells her she's gone wrong.
And it's probably the latter of those two things.
She has got poodle in her, and they're very clever poodles. So
Are they?
Yeah, no, they're very clever poodles. She's not a poodle. She's a Labrador.
I think sometimes we see poodles and we judge them on their appearance, on their hair, and think,
that's the
Americanized
poodle. Like we grew up with poodles with long shaggy coats that looked so they weren't dressed. They get bad press, poodles, because of that. It's a bit like Labradors get a bad press because they're greedy. You know, there's like labels stick and it hurts, I think, those poodles.
Yeah. Well, especially Olive and Mabel come from working lines. So they are, you get show Labradors and you get working line Labradors. Right. And show Labradors are bred to be big and chunky and a tendency to the portly. Whereas working ones were historically
so
working
leaner.
Dogs.
Yours,
so they're slimmer.
Leaner,
yeah, they're only about 25 kilos each. I mean, Mabel's not even that. So whereas Labradors for show are bred with big broad faces and necks and really big dogs. But so we've strayed off into dog territory there.
No, that's good, because this is kind of, this whole, a lot of midlife is people making decisions about whether they do something really brave they've always wanted to do and change the trajectory of their life, or whether they just decide, right, you know what, I'm going to be content. So one of my friends told me that she'd read an article that 47 is the age where if you haven't achieved what you want to achieve, you're going to, that's your disposition. You're then going to be in that kind of zone for the rest of your life. If you have, you'll carry on doing things that you really want to do. I'm not sure I quite believe it. It's almost like it's a pivotal age.
No, but that is fascinating, because for the last couple of years, I have been thinking, now, you and I are very fortunate to do the jobs we do. It's a job that people would kill to do. Actually, that's a bit excessive and definitely not allowed. Don't do it. But the job we do is so enjoyable, and it is a real aspiration for lots of people to work in broadcasting or to work in sports broadcasting. Again, they'll say you get paid to watch sport and talk about sport. We know there's a lot more to it than that, but it's still a brilliant job. Mm-hmm. Yet for the last few years, because you do the same events year in, year out, by and large, it's still brilliant. And I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea here, but you do kind of think, is this it? Or is there something else that I could be doing? I've been doing this for, you know, 20 years or more. And so you do think, oh, I'd love to try that. And I've always wanted to try making films, making documentaries, making something, making comedy or writing, whatever it might be. And absolutely, you think, I'd love to do that, but I haven't got the time, because you're into this rut, this very comfortable, enjoyable rut. But it does become this furrow that has been dug for
you at the beginning of every year, before that even, years before, the major events you're going to work on. You know, so as interesting and as different every day can be, actually, it's pretty much set, isn't it, what you're going
to
do.
It is. And so you might have all these aspirations or plans to have done other stuff. And this is the same for people in all walks of life. Mm. They get into a job and it pays the mortgage and they quite enjoy it. But they might have had dreams or thoughts that they might want to do something else. And I've thought of that quite a lot over the last few years, but you don't have the opportunity. And then suddenly 2020 happens, and it's not that you make something happen, but it's just that a gap is made for you and you have to do something else. And it might have started as something silly, just to entertain yourself or to entertain some other people, but suddenly it opens up a project, writing a book, and it opens up the capability to... You've got a platform and a willing audience for you to make films, mm-hmm. for them. And, you know, making a little mini documentary, a mockumentary involving Olive and Mabel or the Zoom meeting, when you could get a chance to be a bit more creative. Now, this is not, you know, this is not Citizen Kane, but it's an opportunity to do something just a bit different. And I have hated this year for many reasons, but I've absolutely loved being given that chance to show a different side.
And do you think, I mean, I wish you massive success with the book and everything else that you do, but do you think that it will also reignite a little bit of appreciation for your day job? Because I imagine that your plan is not to completely leave commentating on regular humans doing sport.
No, it's not, because that is something that I have enjoyed and do enjoy and will enjoy again in the future, and hopefully, you know, continue to be, you know, do a reasonable job at it. It again is not... is any job stable at the moment? But it's not the most stable job, because we know that rights for sports events can come and go. And when you're a freelancer, you suddenly might find yourself with a bit of a gap in the calendar. So it's always nice to have something else available, whether it's whether it's a podcast or stuff that you put on YouTube. Even that's, you know, a way of doing things, making little films or writing books. Doing other things. I will always try and keep that going now. I'm not going to drop that at all. Mm-hmm. It will, I'm sure, be a bit more Olive and Mabel. It might be something else. Other projects might arise. But you're absolutely right. This time of life is when you say it's the crossroads. It's now or never. It is absolutely now or never. And you get this sort of existential angst about it all and say, is this what I do? Is this what I am? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be forevermore. And what is my purpose? And what am I? And so you think, right, I'll do this and it might work. The worst thing to do would be to look back and say, I wish I'd tried. I wish I'd taken a little bit of a leap. And if it didn't work, it didn't work. But at least I had a little glimpse at what was out there, what was possible. And so I had a very interesting offer from... I mean, you couldn't get a bigger figure in the entertainment industry who came in and said, look, let's try and, you know, see what we can do with Olive and Mabel. And I would hate to look back in 5 years' time, 10 years' time and say, I wish I'd done something more with that opportunity.
Can you not say? Can you not say what it is?
No, I can't.
Is there going to be a musical?
It's going to be a musical. So we're just trying to get Barrowman on board at the moment to play Oliver Mabel.
To play you?
Yeah, to play me, of course. Why did I say Oliver Mabel? To play me. He is, I mean, he's Scottish-Canadian, isn't he? So... And he's got us. We've both got a flamboyance about
David
us.
Tennant. David Tennant would play you.
Tennant, yeah.
Yeah. In the film,
It's just interesting. And you don't want to look back and say, "I just carried on doing sport," which I love doing. I love sports broadcasting, but there was more out there, and I wish I'd had a look at it. So I'm going to explore every possibility. Not every possibility. There's been lots of stuff that's come in, which is just nonsense.
Do you look at Mabel and Oliver and go, "Oh God, I'm sorry, I'm taking you on this journey you didn't ask to be taken."
Yeah, absolutely. That is a large part of it. You know, because they're my dogs and I love them. They are just my dogs and just should be more than enough because they are brilliant and everything to me. And suddenly you're thinking, right, okay, well, what? Oh God, she's going a bit grey. Are we going to have to touch up her hair there? The whole thing is, you know, and then you start to think, well, I mean, as a working actor, she's only got 2 years of looking great. So
have you got some puppies in the back that you're just bringing through?
Yeah, exactly. Flashback. I do think sometime that. Should we bring in another cast member? Like when Scrappy Doo joined Scooby Doo and nobody liked it.
This is a podcast, Kenny. You're not supposed to.
You mean?
Look at him. Look how optimistic he is. You can't, if you just listen to this.
Thank you, Kenny. Thank you, Kenny.
Jim Telfer wouldn't have approved of that.
Yeah. He's just pulled back the curtain there. He's just
broken down the fourth wall. Yeah.
To be fair to him, where I'm recording is my side of the office and his side is around there. And I did put a huge sign on the office door saying podcast in record, but clearly he's going to use his dyslexia as an excuse now.
But do you know the beautiful sort of synergy of this is that Kenny has wandered in like a happy Labrador and my two, Olive and Mabel, have wandered into to this room that I'm doing it in. So we've just been joined by very optimistic creatures throughout this podcast.
Exactly. And as you said that, Milo, our boxer's barking in the background, but you can't hear him. He's not coming in. So it's interesting that you obviously have got that you've seized the opportunity. You're loving it as well because you might have hated it. You know, what if it had all been not what you wanted and you didn't feel very good about yourself and you felt like, you know, this isn't working. But actually, you've seized something that has become huge. You know, potentially bigger than you.
Oh, much bigger than me. Yeah, but I would stop you there because there is definitely a negative side to it all. I mean, you know, when something goes viral and videos go viral and when you are stupid enough to have one of your email addresses on your Twitter account, you know, well, exactly. But that was there because in past, you know, as a freelancer, someone might contact you and say, could you come and host an event at the Darts or something? And then...
Remember when we used to do events? Do you remember those days?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's it. But then, so you think, you're dangling your rod in normal times and you might get occasional fish biting. And then suddenly videos go viral and you're... rod is just eaten by many, many sharks. That's a terrible analogy. Anyway, so the world just suddenly floods in.
Can I use that as the clip? When my rod was eaten by many sharks.
Yeah, exactly. there's a chapter for the book. But there's definitely, you're engulfed by it all because it is just extraordinary, the volume of interest and requests and offers and demands or whatever it might be that come into your life, and you certainly can't respond to them all. And at times
not,
you can't.
Okay,
cope
I'm
all.
Guessing if it's not a musical, has Danny Boyle been in touch? Is it a movie? Is it a?
I would do that. I would do that definitely. So I'm, no, I'm it's just. I mean, yeah.
There are you going to be commentating on the Six Nations next year, or will you be in LA? That's the thrust of this.
I'll be commentating on the Six Nations
from
LA, yeah, sitting by my pool going, yeah, it's disappointing from Scotland.
Imagine if you have like this huge metamorphosis, right, and you become this kind of LA kind of lifestyle, rooftop Ferrari, roof down the Ferrari, cruising down. Kenny's actually laughing on the other side of his
Ferrari. I've got a Ferrari. I'm so important now. I've got a Ferrari and I've put it on my roof.
Roof down on the Ferrari. I didn't even know what a sloping roof was called. And I'm that far away from that lifestyle. I couldn't grasp the word convertible. And you're eating at the best restaurants and you're dining with, I mean, like we would all, everybody in BBC Sport would, we would just be laughing. It would be
hilarious. Yeah, exactly. I think the fact that we're all laughing, we know that it's not going to happen.
We're laughing, sheer jealousy.
These things are fleeting and ephemeral, and especially on social media. Yes, you can make things last a bit longer by taking them off social media and moving them onto a more stable platform, whatever that platform might be. But the videos, in particular the commentary videos, were very much of the moment and zeitgeisty, and even the Zoom meeting. So that's why if you want to make it last longer, you move towards... the book will last a little bit longer, but then you move it on to different projects. You develop it all. And that's why you do the little documentary, you do other little videos, or you carry it forward. So there is potential to do that, but I don't know, the entertainment industry and the more creative industry, we talk about sports broadcasting being fickle because of rights, but those other arms of the entertainment industry are even more fickle and unstable. And so do you, again, when we talk about the crossroads and you might want to try this, but at the same time you'll try it, but you know that this road straight ahead that you've been on for a while is more reliable, and you're going to have some sort of...
You're speaking to somebody who did a show called Flock Stars, so I mean,
listen, if they want to revive that, I'm all over it with all of them. Mabel's
with you on it, we would have had a success in our hands. I mean, you can imagine my excitement when I was asked to host a show that was about teaching celebrities to herd sheep. I thought this is the next Bake Off. I was wrong, and that's how sometimes it can go wrong. Actually,
but I find that whole thing fascinating because, and again, I've seen a glimpse of that in the last few months in terms of offers, and some of them are so ridiculous and would just make you look ridiculous that you think, well, why would I do that? And most of them involve commentating on various silly things. But the temptation might be, oh, I'm just going to do everything, try everything. But then you really...
Yeah, you have to have some kind of filter, don't you?
Yeah, but you're right. But the temptation is always there because you think, oh, these people want me.
You're saying that's why I did Flock Stars, because I just...
I'm interested in how that was pitched to you, though.
I genuinely thought there was going to be a movement after Bake Off towards lovely, wholesome activity and family. Yeah. And where they missed a trick on that show, I think, and I haven't analysed this too much, is we should have done it with real people and not with celebrities. When I say real people, people with real lives, not celebrities who expected winning.
Yeah,
Bake
because
Off.
Then it becomes like a bit like a generation game dynamic, where it's real people put in this situation, so you get genuine reaction, whereas celebrities are always more comfortable and they're showing off a little bit anyway, so it's not real.
And also the people from, you know, lives that we didn't know about, there would have been a journey and a story and all those things that make a show more wholesome anyway.
Oh, we should pitch it again. We've got to
I'll repitch it this time. Andrew Cotter commentates. I mean,
Alvin Mabel,
like, all
and
over
real
it.
People
but this is a very good time to introduce my expert for this podcast. Every podcast we have somebody who has a particular skill and some expertise that hopefully is not necessarily pertaining to you, although I did carefully select today's expert with you in mind, because Jim Heitner, have you ever met Jim Heitner?
No.
Have you ever heard me talk about him? He's the global COO of IPG Media Brand, and he is a mentor, business mentor. I met him at ITV when he was head of marketing at ITV, and he basically can sell and launch kind of anything, and he's brilliant at what he does.
Flock Stars?
I said brilliant, not a miracle worker. So what I thought was, because a lot of people will be doing what you're doing, not to the, you know, huge Keddy heights you're doing it, but a lot of people will have come up with ideas in lockdown, or they will have had that moment where they've said, if I don't do this business idea now, if I don't sell this thing that I've invented, or I don't write this book, whatever it is, I'm never going to do it. And it's how you turn that into a success. So this is not for you specifically, obviously, but I just I thought it was a good time to speak to Jim. So, Jim, Andrew has obviously been talking about his incredible career change and things that, well, it's going to go alongside his regular career. But, you know, what an incredible opportunity that he's created for himself. And so many people in lockdown have had the space and the time to think about ideas, you know, whether it's just I like working from home, how do I do that more? Or I've invented this thing and I want to launch it. What are the fundamental do's and don'ts for somebody who is wanting to launch themselves into something new?
By the way, I love Andrew's films of Mabel and Olive. And I think, Andrew, I was an early adopter. I'd like to say that I'm not an early adopter of many things, but I was an early adopter of Andrew's Mabel and Olive films. And it's just brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much.
A genius idea. But I was thinking, both of you, that it starts with his love for Mabel and Olive. And that would be my first tip, that anything you want to do or think would be a great idea has to stem, I think, from a passion or an interest. I mean, you'd have to start with the premise that you'd be automatically brilliant at it. I think if I woke up tomorrow morning and thought I'd be a great sports presenter, Gabby, you might tell me that might be tricky. But I think you have to be genuinely interested or like what your business idea is. And so I don't know if filming Mabel and Olive was hard work, Andrew. It doesn't look like it, but that's the trick behind all genius ideas. But most businesses are hard work, as you know, and it takes a bit to get them off the ground. You have lows and you have highs, but mostly at the beginning, I would think you have lows. So if it's not something you love or believe in, it's not going to work, I think, would be a good tip. Following on from that, I think you have to also ask yourself the question, am I really committed to it? I know I am today. I know I can't wait to tell all my friends about it right now. I'm going to call my parents to tell them what I'm about to do. But when the adrenaline rush is over and when the phone has stopped, I guess you have to work out whether you're going to cope with the first bump in the road. Am I still up for it? And I think, you know, gym membership, Gabby, I think people who join a gym, I think the average length of tenure is about 6 weeks before you go back to your rosé and steak and chips and you give up going. So I think you have to be really committed to it. In lockdown, I think lots of my friends have said, I'm going to learn French, or I'm going to learn how to make sourdough bread. And I don't know how many of them are still learning French, and I don't know if any of them have cracked the baking of sourdough bread. But you've got to be committed once that first tinge of excitement has gone. And then lockdown, I was thinking about, you know, so many businesses have thrived in lockdown, either because they were always there, but we need them more, like Amazon, which I know has absolutely taken off like nothing else, and home delivery, and Lego, who we work with, I know can't fulfill all their orders. But there are also businesses who have been created because of lockdown, like a snood that is now a mask, or a mask is now a snood. But whatever the idea, unless you're going to do it as an additional thing to your day job, it has to be sustainable, and it has to have legs. It has to have longevity if you're going to pursue it instead of your actual job, if you're giving up the ghost for everything. And then finally, Gabby, I thought the most challenging of all is you have to work out whether it's a good idea or not. And if it is a good idea, are you the best person to pull it off? And frankly, there's no quick answer to that. I can't answer how to work out whether it's a good idea or not. So I would say, finally, do you love the idea? Are you passionate about it? Is it something you can't wait to dive into, whether it makes money or not? Because I think that's the key to developing a new business idea. Don't go into it for the money, because it's almost certainly not going to make you a lot of money. You're not probably going to be the one that takes it to FTSE 100 level. Don't go into it for fame. If it's going to feed your soul, and it's whether it's a success or a failure, it's going to feed your soul and make you happy, then I think that would be a good criteria for it. That's it.
Jim, I think, there are loads of different ideas. I kept looking at Andrew because I can see him on a screen and, you know, kind of thinking that actually all of those points pertain to what he's doing. He's going to be fine. Andrew is going to be fine. He's going to be very successful. If it's a much more orthodox business idea, you know, what Andrew's doing is very extraordinary.
Yeah.
What do you think are the biggest pitfalls? Where do people fall down in those early stages? Because you'll probably tell me the exact expression, but there's something like, for every billionaire entrepreneur, they had, you know, kind of 48 ideas that didn't come off before they got the one that was, you know, to launch them into the kind of realms of success, or how people judge success anyway, financially.
Yeah, I think that's just a great question, because I think the answer to it is patience. Because if you have obviously one of the answers to it is funding, but you know, how do you find the funding? But before you get to the funding bit, I think you have to be patient in terms of developing the idea in a small way. You know, if we have a great idea, right, I'm going to open a restaurant chain. Yeah, probably the best idea is to open the first restaurant in Borrowdale in the Lake District, where you're not going to have high profile guests, and you're not going to have, you know, 150,000 people walking in overnight, and you're going to be able to make mistakes. I only say Borrowdale because I love Borrowdale, not because it's a backwater. It's actually a front water.
You're basically saying the next time you go there, Jim, you want a nicer restaurant to eat at. I think that's what that was.
Yeah, well, I would. Well, here's the thing, Gabby. My dream, when I want to give everything up, is to open a tea and cake shop in Borrowdale. But I know I can't, because guess what? I can't bake. And I wouldn't have the patience to deal with grumpy customers. So there you go. That's my idea. And I can't do it because, although the Lake District is my passion, the idea falters at the first hurdle. But I think patience and the idea of going small before you go large is probably a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think the sort of intangible thing is that the ingredient that you need is luck as well. You need some sort of fortune to smile on you in terms of timing, in terms of other factors coming into play. You can have the best idea in the world, and you can have all the drive and commitment and ambition in the world, but if you don't have that, whatever it might be that just causes something to take off or gives you that opening of the timing or whatever, again, it might be that luck plays a part. And that was certainly the case with all of Mabel and Me, because that wasn't, I didn't think, right, how can I monetize this? How can I make another career here? It was just something which by chance happened to take off because I was doing something to try and make some people laugh. It was the luck that I had the real need to show off or whatever. So it's, but in terms of getting into broadcasting, you know, earlier on, Gabby would, you know, have a similar tale. I mean, I, you know, patience is the thing that you talk about there, and you do need to be patient. You need to persevere, and you're going to get knocked back, and you're going to at times think this is never going to happen. But if you're able to stick at it, then you have to stick at it because the doors might open. Something like broadcasting, and I'm sure it's the same for other you know, walks of life, are very difficult to get into. But I'm never one of these people that say if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, because that's just not true. I don't believe in fate or anything like that. But there's certainly a collision of factors that come together that might make something happen. But you've got to be patient, because a lot of youngsters these days, I don't have children, and I would sort of not fear for them, but I'd feel quite uncomfortable that they believe that you're told that you can do anything and you can have anything. If you work hard enough, you can be anything you want to be. And sadly, that's not the case, because not everybody can be successful. It's just, you know, it's a combination of talent and hard work, whatever. But one thing you have to have is patience, because it's not going to come immediately.
And also, I wonder, Jim, about the great advice, Andrew. By the way, that part will be snipped out and given to my kids.
Just snipped out and given to nobody.
That bit will be snipped out and become the podcast. No, the brand's values, Jim, are very important. Now, Andrew's values for, you know, what he's doing is just faultless, isn't it? You know, it's a love of animals, it's comedy, it's like the perfect confluence of things that everybody loves. So the brands that survive this period and the brands that flourish in this period, do they have a kind of similar value kind of structure? Are they noticing trends in that area?
Well, not trends during lockdown, Gabby, but the trends that have always been the same for brands have continued in lockdown. And that trend for me is authenticity. And that's what Andrew is. And that's what he is as in his main job. And it shines through. And it's what comes through with Mabel and Olive. It's authenticity is everything for a brand. If a brand is created and particularly now with social media, obviously, and you know this, with the advent of digital, if a brand is created and it purports to be something that it isn't, it doesn't matter how much money you throw at it. It doesn't matter how much TV advertising there is. It doesn't matter how many people you get to endorse it. You could get you to endorse it, Gabby, who is yourself you are yourself an authentic human being. I happen to know that. People will see through it. And that is, for me, the great brands are authentic.
I think authenticity is just enormous, isn't it? Because, off the back of all this, you have so many offers to advertise stuff. And Sometimes a product that I do believe in, and other times it'll be one that I certainly don't believe in. But, you know, if you can't do it genuinely anyway, if people are seeing something and saying, this is just somebody who's been approached to do this ad, then it's just going to turn you away from that product. Whereas if something is done organically and genuinely and it looks natural, that it makes all the difference in the world. And I think that's one of the things about, I feel strange even talking about it in this way, but one of the things I quite like about, you know, Olive and Mabel is that they remain natural looking. You wouldn't dress them up. You wouldn't put them in a situation that makes them look absurd. It's just dogs being dogs. So it retains that sort of genuineness.
And it's the simplicity, Jim, I guess, if we just kind of distill this and a final word on this, that kind of sums up the simplicity sometimes of the most brilliant ideas. And maybe what if people are kind of thinking, well, I've got this idea, actually try and make it as simple as possible. Would that be a good idea?
Yes, it would. And that's why Andrew's films work. They're not contrived. The idea is simple, clear, focused. You know, the more he complicates it, the less interesting it will be for people, the less engaged people will be. The simplest ideas are the great ideas, and they only fail because we then overcomplicate.
Okay, this is putting a kibosh. I was going to film Ben-Hur for dogs this afternoon, and now I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't do that.
Well, cash in, Andrew. Why not?
Thank you so much for your years and years of expertise that you managed to distill down for us into a tiny little nuggets there. They're brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks, Gabby.
I got Jim on just to make you feel even better that you're just doing everything right. It's all
lovely, man. It's about to come crashing down around my ears.
he's great, and everything you said about authenticity and about the simplicity, that kind of is exactly what you're doing, isn't it?
Simplicity is one of the things as well. I really enjoyed making that the mockumentary thing, because I enjoyed the creative process of that. But sometimes it's a far more simple thing. The other night I put out a picture of someone had written in a paper about
I saw that.
And Andrew Carter's had great success, you know, with his dogs Maisie and Mabel. And then so I just put out a little clipping that I'd like to say I made sure that a cutout, you could hardly see what paper it's from. You certainly didn't see a byline, because I hate sort of criticism of other people.
I call people
the wrong names all the time in commentary. So it wasn't about that, but it was then with a photo of Olive looking really, really pissed off. So it was that her name had been forgotten. And you know, that simple photo, you got about 45,000 likes, you know, and it took no time at all. And whereas I spent 2 weeks making that documentary, which again got, you know, a good few, you know, views. But it's sometimes there's just a simplicity. But again, that's just luck. It comes down to a look from the dog or a simple, very simple idea. So yeah, exactly. Simplicity is definitely a good way of looking at things.
We're kind of like coming towards the end. You'll be relieved to know of our chat. You no longer have to stare at me down the lens of it. Well, you haven't stared at me at all. You've actually just looked off camera most of the time. With your life now kind of moving in a very different direction in the middle of your life, and and I kind of usually finish off chains people, do you feel hopeful for the future? Has all this made you a little bit more optimistic?
I've seen a very positive side of social media. There's no doubt about that. I've seen a lot of love and a lot of nice people out there. And I, you know, quite often, as I say, don't necessarily see that side of humanity. I almost don't want to end the podcast in the way of someone in the midlife looking forward, because the second half of people's lives you know, it's not one of unbridled happiness, because this is terrible. This is the real
this is the perfect way to end
exactly.
this, telling everybody it's all going to get worse.
People could say, oh, I'm looking forward to growing old disgracefully. It's going to be fantastic. Well, it's not.
But the thing is, it's so interesting. I had Claudia Winkleman said almost exactly that she's looked forward to being 60 all of her life, because she's kind of reveling in the idea of being older. And it's not necessarily a viewpoint that I can't,
you know, I just don't see that at all, because a lot of it is a physical thing, in that I love sporting activity. I love, you know, I'll cycle, I'll still run, you know, my hip's hurting a bit just now, and that's something that didn't happen 10 years ago. I stopped playing golf because of my hip, you know. Golf's supposed to be a thing you go to all.
You need a new hip, mate. You need a new hip.
Well, no, exactly, but that's still 10 years down the line. But everything starts falling apart, your teeth start falling out and your hair goes and whatever. So it's not one of, you can't, I think if you're looking forward to that or something, come on now, really.
But it's interesting. No, it's really interesting that you've gone for the physical things, because this is where we differed, Claudia and I, because I said to her, the reason I do exercise all the time is because I just want to keep being able to be active. And because she's never really been into exercise, she kind of
That's what I said.
That.
It's one of my brothers who's very much of the same mentality as me. We say that people who say, I'm looking forward to growing old, can't have that. And Claudia Winkleman looks in great shape, but they can't have been that sporty or active, you know, younger, because you wouldn't look forward to old age, because you're going to miss that. You're not going to be able to do that. And I need exercise and activity to keep my mental equilibrium, because I need the endorphins. I need psychologically, if I don't exercise, and I've seen you in the gym as well, whenever we're on these trips working, even when you're absolutely knackered, you need to get to the gym or do a run in the evening or whatever it is to just decompress and calm down and also give yourself that little bit of a...
Well, here's the good news then, because Greg White was on with John Bishop on this podcast.
Right, yeah.
And he said, I said, okay, just sit it all down for us and give us the nugget, the one thing that midlifers need to know about exercise. And he said, you got to train harder than you've ever trained. And that was actually, that was just a joy to hear, because he wasn't saying slow down. He said, whatever you're doing, do it harder. So there you go.
Yeah, but you've got to, but then physically sometimes that might not be possible with injuries that come in. But you, as a man, certainly, because your testosterone diminishes, and not in me clearly, but you should be doing more weights as well, because you just cannot build the muscle.
And women need to do more weights. It's much harder to retain muscle.
Well, exactly, because of your osteoporosis, etc. So you've got to do impact exercise as well. So perversely, when your body is less capable of it, that's when you should be doing more and more exercise. But there are always things that you can do, but it's like an ever decreasing triathlon as you get older, because you'll lose running, then you'll maybe lose cycling, and eventually you'll just be paddling around in a pool in your 80s. But you've got to keep trying to do something. That's the key thing. And that's why, on this serious note, Andrew preaching from the sermon, the pulpit towards the end, that's why I really, really dislike seeing people who have healthy enough bodies and young bodies not taking care of them. Because what a privilege it is to have that health, body, and to be able to use it, and then just to waste it. And they'll maybe regret that in later life. But while you've got that, use it. God's sake. There we are. Let's just end on dogs. Olive and Mabel, aren't they great?
They're amazing, aren't they? They're just fantastic. And next time we meet up, because I did want to come up and do this podcast with you. I don't actually know where you live. I know it's somewhere up north, but I would have just driven and eventually
down south to me. It's Cheshire. It's not far from
Warrington.
There's
probably a blue plaque outside your house now. Oliver and Mabel live here or something.
Well, someone was walking down, so the pond where I filmed Mabel's pond escapades is sort of up at the end of the lane, and someone was walking around here, and they said, I recognise that pond. That pond is from... And a couple of people said, all right, that pond from that video is just around there. So I think there will eventually be a statue of... or become known as Mabel's Pond. It doesn't have a name, so...
Oh,
there
wow. Mabel's Imagine pond. If it becomes known as Mabel's Pond.
Mabel's Pond. I'm starting that campaign
that's
now.
That's book two, Mabel's Pond.
Yeah, the one that doesn't sell at all. And then they suddenly realise that it's all over. And there we are. I'm heading towards later.
You've been a joy, as I knew you would, even though you attempt not to be.
Have I been a joy?
You know, in an Andrew Cotter kind of way.
Dark joy.
I've enjoyed it anyway. So hopefully everyone listening has too. Thank you so much, and best of luck with everything. And I know you're going to be a massive success, and that we're all going to be queuing up to buy tickets to watch the movie and go see the musical and all of that. But hopefully I'll see you back at work soon sometime.
Yeah, someday, one of these days, 2023, we'll be doing events again. All right, thanks, Gabby.
Thank you. Well, it was an absolute joy getting Andrew Cotter onto the podcast. And have a look for Mabel and Olive. If you haven't seen their videos already, they are so joyful. And it's also such a thrill to have a friend you've known for such a long time, a colleague who you know is super talented at their day job, to see him launch this second career, because we've all known he's very funny and very clever and a brilliant writer. And now the rest of the world does too. So hopefully that has inspired you. If you've got something you really want to do, go and do it. Give it a go. Solgar's website is also another great place to browse while you're looking for Mabel and Olive. They've made it easy to find vitamins and supplement options, especially if you go to their daily well-being section, because you can have a little look there and see what you might need a boost of as we go into winter. Thank you so much to Solgar, to producer Emma Corsham at Rethink Audio, and to you for listening. I'll be back next week.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.